fury. The noun fury is commonly associated with extreme anger. However, when the Oxford Dictionary of Current English discusses the fury of a gathering storm, the meaning morphs into intense energy. When one of England's finest writers, G.K. Chesterton, spoke of the furious love of God, he was referencing the enormous vitality and strength of the God of Jesus seeking union with us. Another ragamuffin, Rich Mullins, sought to describe the same longing of God. In the reckless raging fury that they call the love of God, I miss my good friend. Enjoying adjectives such as furious, passionate, vehement, and aching to describe the longing of God are my mumbling and fumbling to express the inexpressible. Yet I plod on. Both theology, which is faith seeking understanding, and spirituality, which is the faith experience of what we understand intellectually, offer a glimpse into the mystery. Now we see only reflections in a mirror, mere riddles. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12. But someday the adjectives will give way to the reality. But then there's also that word Chesterton used, union. That's one of the most explosive words in my Christian vocabulary. The daring metaphor of Jesus as bridegroom suggests that the living God seeks more than an intimate relationship with us. The reckless, raging fury of Yahweh culminates, dare we say it, in a symbiotic fusion, a union so substantive that the Apostle Paul would write, "It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me." Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. In a fascinating footnote to that verse, the Jerusalem Bible adds, "The living acts of a Christian become somehow the acts of Christ." Gulp. My critics, and there are and have been many, protest that I write too much about the love of God and not enough about sin and judgment and hell and how to keep Christ in Christmas. They claim that I am unbalanced, unsound, and a little bit crazy. While I plead guilty to that last charge, I am confident that God will raise up other unbalanced, unsound, and crazy writers to cry with me the French Easter liturgy, "L'amour de Dieu est folie." L'amour de Dieu est folie. The love of God is folly. Elsewhere, I've written that Jesus came not only for those who skip morning meditations, but also for real sinners, thieves, adulterers, and terrorists, for those caught up in squalid choices and failed dreams. "I have come to call not the self-righteous, but sinners." Matthew chapter 9, verse 13. This is a passage to be read and reread because every generation has tried to dim the blinding brightness of its implications. Those of us scarred by sin are called to closeness with Him around the banquet table. The kingdom of God is not a subdivision for the self-righteous or for those who lay claim to private visions of doubtful authenticity and boast they possess the state secret of their salvation. No, as Eugene Kennedy notes, it is for larger, homelier, and less self-conscious people who know they are sinners because they have experienced the yaw and pitch of moral struggle. The men and women who are truly filled with light are those who have gazed deeply into the darkness of their own imperfect existence. For 21 years, I tried desperately to become Mother Teresa. I lived around the world in griming poverty and depersonalizing squalor. I lived voluntarily for 6 months in the garbage dump in Juarez, Mexico. Garbage there as high as your ceilings. It was a place filled with everyone from 4- and 5-year-old children to senior citizens in their 80s, all crawling over broken whiskey bottles and dead animals just to find something to eat or possibly sell to hawkers on the side of the road. I've lived voluntarily as a prisoner in a Swiss prison. The warden there believed priests shouldn't be chaplains, but actual prisoners. Only the warden knew my identity. I've lived on the streets of New York City with 11, 12, and 13-year-old prostitutes, both boys and girls, and ministered to them through Covenant House. I just knew if I could become a replica of Mother Teresa, then God would love me. Pretty impressive, right? Yeah, right. That's just a part of who I am. The rest of Brennan Manning is a bundle of paradoxes and contradictions. I believe in God with all my heart. And in a given day, when I see a 9-year-old girl raped and murdered by a sex maniac, or a 4-year-old boy slaughtered by a drunken driver, I wonder if God even exists. As I've said before, I address Him, and I get discouraged. I love, and I hate. I feel better about feeling good. I feel guilty if I don't feel guilty. I'm wide open. I'm locked in. I'm trusting and suspicious. I'm honest, and I still play games. Aristotle said I'm a rational animal, but I'm not. That's some of the rest of Brennan. Ironically, it was April Fool's Day, 1975, 6:30 a.m., and I woke up in a doorway on Commercial Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I was thick in an alcoholic fog, sniffing vomit all over my sweater, staring down at my bare feet. I didn't know a wino would steal my shoes during the night to buy a bottle of Thunderbird, but one did. I had been out on the street for a year and a half, drunk every day, sleeping on the beach until the cops chased me away. You could find me in doorways or under the bridge, always clutching my precious little bottle of tequila. And it wasn't just that this good Franciscan priest drank too much. I broke every one of the Ten Commandments 6 times Tuesday. Adultery, countless acts of fornication, violence to support my addiction, character assassination to anybody who dared to criticize me or remonstrate with me. The morning I woke up in the alcoholic boozy fog, I looked down the street to see a woman coming toward me, maybe 25 years old, blonde and attractive. She had her son in hand, maybe 4 years old. The boy broke loose from his mother's grip, ran to the doorway and stared down at me. His mother rushed in behind him, tucked her hand over his eyes and said, "Don't look at that filth. That's nothing but pure filth." Then I felt her shoe. She broke 2 of my ribs with that kick. That filth was Brennan Manning, 32 years ago. And the God I've come to know by sheer grace, the Jesus I met in the grounds of my own self, has furiously loved me regardless of my state, grace or disgrace. And why? For His love is never, never, never based on our performance, never conditioned by our moods of elation or depression. The furious love of God knows no shadow of alteration or change. It is reliable and always tender. So I am proud only of those days that we pass in undivided tenderness. Robert Bly. My experience of His furious love often fills me with a fury as well, when I hear well-known preachers and televangelists distorting Abba's image. Jesus says, "Live in Me. Make your home in Me just as I do in you." John chapter 15, verse 4. Home is a place of welcoming love, non-judgmental acceptance, accompanied by many signs of affection. His invitation to intimacy is startling, contrary to all the pontifications of certain religious leaders and champions of Deuteronomic morality. Their unbending rule-keeping petrifies his furious compassion. This should not be so. The awesome love of our invisible God has become both visible and audible in Jesus Christ. The glory of the only Son, filled with enduring love. The Apostle Paul prays for us all in Ephesians chapter 3, verses 17 through 19, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ which surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled up to all the fullness of God. Do you hear what Paul is saying? The love of Christ is beyond knowledge. We've got to let go of our impoverished, circumcised, traditionalist, legalistic, human perceptions of God and open ourselves to the God in Jesus Christ. If we will, the promise is that we will be filled up with the fullness of God. That is truly good news. So much of what was presented to me as real in bygone days, I now see as fictitious. The splenetic God of alternating moods, the prejudiced God partial to Catholics, the irritated God disgusted with believers, the warrior God of the just war, the fickle God of casuistic morality, tut-tutting our little weaknesses, the pedantic God of the spiritually sophisticated, the myriad of gods who imprisoned me in the house of fear. I could go on. Von Balthasar's credo rings true to me. Love alone is credible. The real God of unrestricted love corresponds to the Jesus of my journey. The closer I come to death, the less inclined I am to limit the wisdom and infinity of God. The confession of John the Apostle that God is love is the fundamental meaning of the holy and adorable Trinity. Put bluntly, God is sheer being in love. And there was never a time when God was not love. The foundation of the furious longing of God is the Father, who is the originating lover, the Son, who is the full self-expression of that love, and the Spirit, who is the original and inexhaustible activity of that love, drawing the created universe into itself. To be careless in the presence of words is to violate a fundamental morality. N. Scott Momaday. It has always been beneficial to acknowledge that books can be deceptive. The most lyrical prose on the furious longing of God creates the illusion that we have already arrived at beatitude. Then, after reading a paragraph or so, you have to return to the sheer ordinariness of your life, to days that bring the same thing over and over again, the drudgery of routine. As the Buddhists say, the laundry. Rather than being appalled by the discontinuity between the poetic and interesting and the prosaic and mundane, it serves well to fasten on the utter delight of a loving God who is deeply touched that, in the brouhaha of your busy life, you would devote even 5 minutes to spiritual reading. A similar and more sophisticated snare entices the writer. After a scintillating sentence such as, "You belong to the quivering coterie of the debauched, languishing in exile," or some such breathtaking words on the coruscating beauty of the living God, the writer discovers with alarm that his prose has made him artificial and insincere. Slavish attention to precise and proper words can seduce the author into a certain kind of posturing, with the catastrophic result that he or she loses touch with his or her broken humanity. The danger of elegant accomplishment besets every artist. What to do? All I have learned through trial and error is to stay alert and aware, especially of God smiling at our silliness. Consider this. 1. There is the you that people see, and then there is the rest of you. Take some time and craft a picture of the rest of you. This could be a drawing, in words, even a song. Just remember that the chances are good it will be full of paradox and contradictions. 2. I listed some fictitious gods presented to me in the past. The splenetic god, the prejudiced god, the irritated god. Come up with at least one more from your history to help round out the list.